Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Dan Johnson, and Rosanna Polito. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. And tonight, folks, the phone lines hopefully are working. They are open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. Wherever you're listening, you could be the first live phone call that we've got from the space in about a month. It could be a historical moment. So get on the line, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet us, it's @Dumo. And again, you can go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com. And again, you can see and watch old broadcasts of the show. So feel free to do that if you miss a show on a week by week basis. There's a lot going on, and I want to talk this evening about the way in which the national media, as Congress has taken its recess, and Congress generally does take a recess in August, they all go away, and it's well planned. It's on everybody's calendar, and there are some things that may not have been resolved. But before the Republican House left, they passed a bill on immigration, on dealing with immigration, before they left. And yet the national news media played it as though it was a do-nothing Congress that did nothing. In your view, Dan, is that an accurate portrayal of what happened just last week with the Republicans? Didn't they do something? I mean, you don't like what they did, but they did do something. And well, the House and the Senate did nothing.
Look, it's clear that this is the least productive Congress in a century. And it's also clear that the minority House, meaning Boehner and his majority that got fewer votes than congressional Democrats did in the 2012 elections in the aggregate, are largely to blame for not bringing to the floor legislation that a clear majority of Americans support, like the comprehensive immigration reform, but lots of other issues like that. So I think it's a fair jab that the House Republicans in Washington are largely responsible for the worst Congress in terms of productivity in a century.
Rosanna Polito, let me follow up with that question and ask you whether you think that as the national news media reports the story generally is about what the House didn't do. They don't focus on what the Senate has not done.
They're really
focusing that the House basically did nothing. The House did do something last week.
Yes, but I believe that the American people, with all every day in the headlines, all the chaos on the border, the American people were yearning for them to even stand up and say something like, you know, this is not right, or say something about they did nothing. I feel this exactly the same way. And especially with my congressman, Adam Kinzinger, who, as far as I'm concerned, is a leader on amnesty. And he wants to be a leader in the Republican Party to get amnesty. So I've been very disappointed, and I believe that is what's going around the country. That's why you see overpasses for America. Americans, you heard about Boston, or in Massachusetts, they had the big rally, 5,000 people showed up. People are mad. They're sick and tired. They see their country going down the tubes by the minute. And I believe that there are do-nothing
Bruno, Congress. You're wearing your sort of libertarian hat this evening. And I know you and Rosanna probably disagree on immigration. We'll talk about that as the program unfolds this evening. But from a political standpoint, can Republicans go back to their district and say, okay, I'm part of a do-nothing Congress, which has been stamped that way by Democrats and by the media, because how many people back home are clamoring them for them to do something? Maybe they like a do-nothing Congress.
I think that's you're probably onto something there. I think they're very, very smart people in Congress, and they have, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, they have all of the polling data. They know exactly what people should say and what they shouldn't say. They have professionals producing documents for them on how to frame this person in this race and that person in that race, and all they're doing here is being cautious. I'm not convinced that – let's put it this way. To the extent that the country may have been pro – immigration reform a few months ago or a year ago, I think that what's happening with this issue and the train loads and bus loads and car loads of children coming over, flooding the border, I think it's actually, from the polls that I've looked at, it's starting to make some of the pro-amnesty people and some of the pro just open up immigration folks, I think it's starting to make some of them a little bit nervous about what should we do about this. So I don't know that let's put it this way. Right before an August recess in a midterm election year, the Republicans know exactly what they're doing. The Democrats know exactly what they're doing. And they're all jockeying and positioning
for issue. They all want an issue to play to their base.
Yeah. And basically the one positive thing you can say about the Republicans in this $682 million bill that wasn't $3.5 billion, which is what Obama wanted, is that they basically said, hey, number one, nothing's going to get past the Senate anyway, and we didn't screw anything up.
Well, get into this void of activity or action, and I agree with you, Rosanna, people are talking about this issue. Does this hand the president on a silver platter an opportunity with an executive order, which is going to drive Republicans crazy, with an executive order to extend some of the wavering of deportations?
Absolutely.
Because again, that's one of the rumors today is that there may be 5 million more Americans that with a signing of a pen will have at least some form of protection and not a deportation order issued.
Well, I hope
them.
So. We've been deporting way too many of our helpful, productive folks in our country. And this wave of deportations is a stupid idea that increases our deficit.
How do you know they're productive?
Because people that are here that have hustled their way to come from their country to our country are typically some of the hardest working people in our country you can find.
But we don't know that about the children that we're dealing with, the 60,000 most recent people.
But we do know this, that the Congressional Budget Office said if we passed comprehensive immigration reform, the deficit goes down, the economy grows. We want to be a growing economy, and one way you do that is with people.
I believe that the president is doing whatever the heck he wants. Congress, the Republican Congress, is doing whatever the heck they want, and that's pretty much worrying about their next reelection. And nobody is listening to the American worker, the American people, Americans who can't get a job. Look at, I live in Illinois, and we're at the bottom of the barrel. So nobody is listening to the American taxpayer. And I think the fever pitch is above our heads right now. And it's absolutely the American people are in despair right now. They want they're dying for leadership from anybody. It's just not there.
Bruno, do you?
Yeah, I actually.
Dire?
No, I don't know that it's that dire. And again, I'm much less of a hawk on immigration than most conservatives. Obviously, this is where I'm more libertarian. I actually think that immigration, legal immigration, is a good thing. And I think that my idea for a bill would be the kind of thing that splits the baby, where you expand legal immigration, you expand a guest worker program, but the people who did come here illegally have to have some sort of they have to pay some kind of cost for having done so.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. That's the phone number. My fingers are crossed. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, hopefully we will take a call. First one in several weeks. Back shortly. Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. And now we're going to go to telephone calls. Daniel, listening to us on KQMS. Are you there, Daniel?
I am. Thank you very much.
Hey!
So
victory! Yay! We're back!
It only took months to do it. Okay, go ahead with your question.
Well, we're trying to burn our forest down here in Northern California, but my question basically is, we talk a lot about the do-nothing Congress and all that. And I agree, it seems like they really are, but I think the big issue is we have more than 350 bills that have come from the House into the Senate. Senate has not considered them, and I don't even want to make this a partisan issue so much as it's an issue about dialogue. And if we got ideas going across from one House to the other, they should at least talk about them and make a vote and decide if something's going to happen or not. They're not doing this, and we can hold nobody accountable.
All right. Well, that's part of the frustration.
I actually have to really agree with him. And one of the political reforms I think we need, not just in Congress, but across this country in every state house, is that and I would almost put it in the U.S. Constitution as an amendment just to force it. But every single bill that gets at least 25% of one chamber to sponsor or do a or release, it has to come for a vote. This idea that committee heads and party leaders can bottle up entire years of legislation through just the simple power of their partisanship, and Boehner can mess with Reid, and Reid can mess with Boehner. I think it's horrible. Everything that gets 25% support should go to a vote.
You like that idea, Roseanne?
Absolutely. And term limits,
like that
too.
Idea?
I thought you were going
to
say term limits.
I do think it's fair. I think D.C. tends to be less small-d democratic in the legislative process to allow bills to come to the floor. As you know, I work Springfield a lot mm-hmm. as a lobbyist. And it just seems like even bills that aren't that popular, most of the time they get a floor vote. And there just aren't enough floor votes in Washington. So the pace of legislation is glacial.
Let's move to Jim, listening to us on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Where are you calling from, Jim? Are you there, Jim?
We got one. We know we got one.
Finn, are you there listening to us on WLS?
Yes, I am.
Good, okay. Two out of three. Go ahead.
I'd like to salute the Do Nothing Congress. The less they do, the better off we all are. And the dictator-in-chief, Barack Obama... Who does he represent? It doesn't seem like he represents the American people. It seems like he represents everybody else in the world but us. And the last comment I would have is...
Is what?
He was overcome with emotion.
Is what?
Hello.
There we are. Go ahead. Continue to talk. We're getting... we may not be out of the woods yet, but make your point. We did not cut you off in any way. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'd finish your point because we didn't get it.
Well, I didn't know I was on the air. But anyway, my name is Kevin. I'm calling you from Sheridan, Illinois. I'm an employer. I've been in business for 20 years. And I think if we made E-Verify mandatory throughout the entire United States, this illegal immigration problem would go away overnight.
Okay, I agree. Why can't we get something like – do you agree with that, Rosanna?
Absolutely.
Why can't we get something that simple done, Dan?
So didn't – I guess I'm confused. Didn't the caller say the less Congress does, the better, and then he
that
said –
That was the other caller.
We have two different
callers.
Well, then I guess I was confused. There's a reason
emerging
I was confused.
Callers. It's a new concept in the show.
I like it. The audience is becoming one.
We're merging the preamble of one guest – with the actual question of another
caller. Excellent. Well, then I feel better about being confused.
So what about the point?
Well, I think the idea is...
E-Verify.
Look.
E-Verify works.
Absolutely.
Why doesn't it work? Why isn't it enforced? Period.
There's one particular... it's a good example of how broken the status quo is. And I think I think there are people that don't want Congress to do anything about immigration or do anything about anything. And those people are just wrong. There's a lot of fundamental problems with a lot of our sections of our economy and immigration.
And there's
totally
a lot of there's
broken.
A lot of laws that are passed that they're not enforced.
Wouldn't you agree?
It can't be any American workers who disagree with that, because immigration laws were created to help American workers, to protect American workers. And right now, when you look around, not too many American workers even have enough work to make ends meet.
So we need more customers. We need more people buying things.
We need E-Verify to make sure that the jobs that are available are taken by American workers.
No. I guess I am right in the middle on this one. I actually think the caller is correct and Roseanne is correct as far as the use of E-Verify. I have said ever since I've debated immigration and with anybody and everybody is that the border is not the Rio Grande. The border is the workplace, and that if however stringent you want to make the border, E-Verify is one of the first pieces of it. You don't, if you aren't legal, you don't get a job. Now the second half of that is, I do think the United States of America needs I've always argued that we should have a two-track immigration system. One is a guest worker track that is not as nice or as pleasant as the citizenship track. And I have no problem with expanding citizenship in this country. And I have no problem with having people coming into this country who want to work. So I think I'm splitting the baby on this one, but I think that you can make a case that the policies on those are correct. E-Verify is important.
But again, on the issue of E-Verify, isn't one of the fears by members of Congress, perhaps from Republicans as well as Democrats, they are a little bit fearful of it because it would work, or it conceivably could work. They are fearful that, again, this is perception now. The perception might be is that one of the reasons why Republicans have not listened as attentively to their base, their vociferous base, which includes you, the Minuteman Project, the Tea Party movement, that one of the reasons why they've not done it is there's another wing of the Republican Party, the business community, Republicans.
Donors.
And donors. They don't want the enforcement because they like the access to the cheap labor.
Correct. They have an unquenchable thirst for cheap labor. Absolutely.
Well, how is that going to change? Is that why it's not enforced?
How?
Is that why we don't see people who own these companies going away in handcuffs,
Correct.
Taking them off to federal prison?
Absolutely. And, you know, you're saying, when is it going to change? And I was on the border in 2005 with the original Minutemen, and we were saying what was happening at the border. And here we are almost 10 years later, the same thing happening. There's no will to close the border. There's no will to crack down on illegal immigration. The other thing about the border, it's not an immigration issue. It's a national security issue. So when I hear a politician say, but we'll secure the border first, it's like, excuse me, sir, that's a national security issue.
Do you see it as a national security issue, Dan?
In a very tangential way. I mean, the fact is our economy is integrated largely with Mexico and by extension Central America. It's largely an economic issue. And I think the idea that, like, we're protecting ourselves from the next Al-Qaeda because a bunch of Mexicans are coming to the U.S., I think is ridiculous.
Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, and Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, both said on television today that there has been an increase in those who have been detained who are coming from the Middle East, that it isn't just Mexicans coming across the border looking for a better life. There's a growing number of evidence because everyone in the world knows we have a sieve on our southern border. And I said that the day after the show after September 11th. And now you have responsible. I certainly think that you're talking about the governor of Texas.
Right.
Again, he may have a political motive.
Yeah.
Mike Rogers, you may say, has a political motive as well. But it seems to me that he's been very reasonable in a lot of the statements.
I think there's
that he's
an
made.
Element to
and
it, there, but it doesn't drive it. It does not drive immigration. There's an element to it.
No, it does not drive immigration, but it speaks to Rosanna's point, is this is a national security issue. It isn't just the security of the kid. No one is looking at the kids, the eight-year-old kids coming to America as the security issue. That's an economic issue. It's a humanitarian issue. But again, we know what 19 people sneaking in this country can do. They didn't even sneak into this country.
Mm-hmm.
They came in, you know, from,
right.
from Canada.
Legally.
So the question is, it seems to me that it could be a legitimate security issue, especially when you expand that definition of security to talk about drug trafficking and human trafficking.
So
we're not making this up.
So I think the problem is it clouds the precision of the inquiry, right? If we start saying, well, the reason we can't integrate 60,000 children into our country of 300 million is because somehow we say national security, that freezes everybody up. I don't think that's helpful to coming to the right policy. I mean, there should be a consensus.
What's helpful is understanding the facts of the southern border, because you want to say that it's unaccompanied children, and the Border Patrol, there have already been plenty of reports saying family units are showing up at the border. These are not unaccompanied children that, you know, they want to put into all these special laws for refugees and all that. That's not happening. It's a very small percent. The Border Patrol is reporting that it is units,
yep.
family units coming.
That
you
was
know
on
what?
One of the reports
That's
today.
That's right. And so they do not fall under
Bruno,
refugees.
What I'd like to ask both sides here, and I've read some articles and thoughts on this, but what caused this? What was the specific thing that caused this influx? I've heard that there was the Bush-era law that was passed about children and
from Central America.
From Central America. And
Step separating them from Mexico.
And then other people, you know, of course, that's what the Democrats like to tell us that. Then, of course, the Republicans like to say that it's because Barack Obama basically said he wants to have, you know, that these people might deserve amnesty or he might do something on his own. But what triggered this influx? Is it just being reported now?
Isn't it like violence in their home countries?
I've heard that as well.
They're bringing them to Chicago. Right. That makes a lot of sense.
The mayor wants more of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. It's a great trade.
More kids.
Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. I mean, the violence in these countries is horrific.
But the violence in the country isn't any worse today than it was 6 years ago. I mean, the violence, the poverty, all the reasons that they're coming here, they're not much different today than they were 6 months ago, or six
That's
years
correct.
Ago.
Well, I'll wait until after the break.
We got a pause. 1-800-723-8290. We have a full board of lights.
Nice.
Come back. We'll see if we got calls. See if they work. Back shortly. From Niles, Michigan to Niles, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Niles, Ohio also, we could throw in there.
Nice.
And Dan Johnson joins us. And Dan, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
I'm originally from Niles, Italy. Just kidding. I'm Dan Johnson. I run a lobbying firm called Progressive Public Affairs here in Chicago. Father of two, husband of one. And my little announcement is I'm working on a startup company called childhealthforms.com. Since I see how annoying these forms are, you have to get to the doctor and the school. And why isn't this all online? So I'm trying to build that site.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thanks.
Bruno Behrend.
My name is Bruno Behrend. I'm a senior fellow at the Heartland Institute, primarily focused on education issues there, but I'm conversant in many others. I'm a former radio host. I also am a board member of an organization called American Transparency, where we are working on putting every single dime of state, local, and federal government spending online in a searchable format, and we're well along our way with that with iPhone and Droid apps for that purpose.
Rosanna Polito.
I'm Rosanna Polito, born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, and I was the director of the Illinois Minuteman Project. I was one of the original Minutemen on the Arizona-Mexico border in 2005, and I ran for Congress in the Illinois 5th Congressional District in 2009 when Rahm Emanuel left to be Obama's chief of staff. And I moved away for a while, and I'm back in Illinois. And because Rahm Emanuel wants 1,000 illegal aliens to come to Chicago, we are starting up the Illinois Minuteman Project again because he needs somebody to deal with them. So, Rahm, here we are.
Now, you have run for office once. You won a Republican primary, and you ran against a Democrat, Mike Quigley, who beat you, and he's now the congressman in a very Democratic district. Would you ever consider running for office again?
I would. It would have to be the right circumstances, but I would.
We live in a sanctuary city. What does that mean to those people around the country, and why, in your view, are sanctuary cities dangerous?
Well, I was a police dispatcher for 3 years. I'm so glad I have a love for law enforcement now, and have been friends also with Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I see what they go through. So in Chicago, in fact, the police hands officers are tied to do anything about somebody they find here illegally. You know, we could also be talking about all besides illegal aliens, people here from, you know, wherever, Al-Qaeda people on the street, their hands are tied. And so being a sanctuary city really gives protection to these people who are here, who may be here to harm American citizens. So it's...
Or they may be here to try to get a job as a busboy and provide for their family.
Come here legally. Come here legally.
What? And you are Mexican.
Absolutely.
Tell us about your background.
Well, I was born and raised here. I spent a year in Mexico also. Unfortunately, I don't speak a lick of Spanish. But what about
your parents? How did they get here?
My dad was born in Baytown, Texas. My mom was born in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
And so...
So their grandparents... How far do you have to go back in your family before you get someone who actually lived in Mexico?
I believe my grandfather's parents...
So that's a ways back.
Yes.
Okay. By the way, we're going to take calls in just a moment, but let me remind you that we have a special event coming up this Friday and Saturday at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It is the 40th anniversary of the resignation of President Richard Nixon. The night before he resigned, he went on national television. And this Friday, the 8th and the 9th, we're going to play, thanks to NBC News, we're going to play the speech of him announcing his resignation. That's on Friday. And then throughout the day on the 9th, the exact 40th anniversary, we're going to play all of the coverage, Nixon's farewell to his staff, which I think was in some ways one of his saddest and maybe one of his finest moments as far as just the emotion of the moment. It will include the swearing-in of President Gerald Ford, and it will be there will be an NBC special. So you're going to have an opportunity to see a lot of this perhaps elsewhere. But again, if you'd like to come in and see it on Friday the 8th, the 9th, at the Museum of Broadcast Communications from 10 in the morning till 5 p.m., the 40th anniversary of Richard Nixon, and our thanks to NBC News for making that available. Let's go to Edward listening to us on WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, panel. Have you noticed that the media doesn't talk a lot about the diseases that these illegals are carrying, but they will talk about those two doctors in Ebola that came from Africa?
Well, I don't know whether we have the specifics on what diseases that they are bringing.
He's absolutely correct.
You have some specifics on
that? Yeah, they talked about H1N1. They talked about that a couple of people had that was in the news.
Should they be vaccinated? Should all these kids be vaccinated?
Yes.
I want to get Roseanne's point on that. What do you think, Roseanne?
I think that they should be sent back. I think that they should be sent back quickly to their country.
During the period when they have not yet been sent back,
yes,
would it be a humanitarian thing to do? Because you cannot start public school in many states if you've not been vaccinated.
But that's, but that doesn't make any difference because you can get on a plane without an ID. They are putting all these people on planes without IDs. So that's another thing they may not require them to do.
But do you think would that be a good idea?
Yes, if they wanted it. I mean, you have to.
How is an 8-year-old child going to make that decision?
Well, most of them are here in a family unit, so you're going to have to ask.
Wait a minute. There are thousands of children that are in these hastily assembled, you know, locations. Some of them which just look outrageous, like kennels. I mean, they're just atrocious. Because we're trying to
really,
trying to
I heard the ones where they have the all-you-can-eat buffet, they have a gym, they have all kinds of different facilities.
I mean, I would just, you know, God bless that we're lucky enough that we weren't born in Nicaragua or Colombia or Bolivia, and we had to walk or get on a bus, travel 1,000 miles to escape atrocious violence back
home.
God bless us that we're so fortunate.
Let's hear what Gaylord Nelson had to say. He's a former Democratic senator. He said, in this country, it's phony to say that I'm for the environment but against restricting immigration. It's just a fact that we can't take all the people who want to come here, and you don't have to be a racist to realize that. He's the Earth Day founder.
Yeah. So you think it's for the environment that we should send 60,000 children back?
No, I think
it's
because we have veterans we can't take care of. We have people on the streets of Chicago we can't take care of.
We're the wealthiest country in the world. We've got plenty of money to take care of everybody that we want to.
$17 trillion in debt. What do you mean we're the wealthiest country
in the world? You know why we're so much in debt? Because we won't pass smart laws like comprehensive immigration reform, which will reduce our deficit and make us wealthier.
That's incorrect.
That's what the facts are.
This is like watching an intellectual tennis match with the ball going back and forth over the net it's very clear that both sides in this debate are raising important points, and you can't just ignore the other side's points and then say, well, nana nana boo boo, our side is correct. You do have health issues. Dan is correct that this is a very wealthy nation, but there's also a limit. I've argued very often that the one limit has to be that we can't bring in more people than we can assimilate, that we can't bring in more people than we can educate, and we already have a system in the education world where we can't even educate our own children for $12,000 a year, much less bring in people from foreign cultures who are already under stress.
We're nowhere close.
And
to
I
that
will
limit.
Add something that I said last week on the program. No matter where you live in the world, if you can't afford to have a child, don't have a child.
I agree with
part
that.
Part of the issue is there's too many children that came from families that really can't afford to take care of their families. And one of the reasons why in some of these cases, not all of the cases, but in some of these cases, you have either the child being shipped ahead in advance without a mother or father, or you have the wife and you have the child coming to the United States while the father is back home.
I agree with it.
Or he's already snuck into the country.
Good family planning is important.
One thing I'd like to throw on the table here, too, is that all of these nations, and I've never understood why the United States of America, with all of this power and all of its wealth, doesn't demand at some point in time, we act as if this is all our unilateral problem, where we either have to let everybody in or throw everybody out or all this stuff. Why can't we go to these countries and say, hey, at some point in time, you're creating our problems with this immigration issue are the fact that you guys can't get your own house in order.
Of course.
And
yeah,
and part right. of
so what are we
going
to do?
Thank
what do we,
you.
What do we say
absolutely.
To Nicaragua, El Salvador? What do we say to them?
How about we say to them, we'll stop buying so many drugs and feeding the violence from these cartels?
Good luck with that. Well, yeah. Luck with that.
So, yeah, maybe we should
that
start.
That is one
it's the drug war that's fueling a lot of
this
violence.
That is an important point, and I wouldn't ignore Dan's point, but the other point that has to be made here is that treaties have to say, so we need some things from people who want to emigrate from America, that they get to have property rights in your country. So there's all sorts of things that should be on the table for Mexico, for Guatemala.
The president's recommendation just a couple of weeks ago is that there be offices set up in these countries so people who want to apply to come to the United States and be a refugee – You fill out your paperwork in that country. Is that a good idea?
No, we already, you know what? We are so blessed here. You're right. We're blessed, and we let a million people come here a year and become citizens. That is more than any country in the whole world. So we're doing our part. We cannot let everybody here. And you know what? My libertarian friend Ron Paul said, you cannot have open borders and a welfare state, which is a good point, which is all we're doing. That's pretty much what it is right now.
I want to get back to being a welfare state. We're going to get rid of our welfare state.
Lots
of callers, by the way. Again, forgive me for those. Now that we have callers, we're going to take them.
We'll see you later.
1-800-723-8029. I promise you, when we come back, wall-to-wall calls the rest of the way. We've got a full board of lights. Again, we're back in business. It's good to hear from the American people again. The plain-speaking American from coast to coast. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. From Mattoon, Illinois to Monterey, New Mexico, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway in Monterey, California as well. And Matt is listening to us on KION in Monterey. Go ahead. You're on the air, Matt.
Bruce, I want to first address one issue that was somewhat addressed, but it really needs to be spoken to, mm-hmm. is the fact that what is illegal immigration costing this country in terms of AFDC, in terms of health care, Obama's health care? In terms of education costs, folks, we got people out there that can't even make their mortgage, let alone afford more illegal immigration. And I want to address the panel, whatever happened to the wall that the United States was supposed to build? In other words, you don't see illegal immigration from North Korea to South Korea.
A wall has been built. It's a 2,000-mile wall. It's not been built. The whole 2,000 miles have not been built. It's been built in some areas. And I think, at least what I've read in the paper, is that where there is a wall, there's a reduction. Obviously, it makes sense. One thing we know about historically, we know about walls. Walls do enforce borders, whether it's North Korea or in Berlin. They do work.
I just find it a little odd, Matt, and maybe you can help me understand. Your first comment is you're concerned about the costs, and your second comment is let's build something that is, what, like three times the size of the Great Wall of China instead of figuring out how to integrate which our economy is already integrated. Let's find a smart way to have all these folks be a part of our economy legally. Do you know how expensive that wall is? That is absurd on its face.
And the other, and every time some, you know, every time someone builds a higher wall, someone builds a better ladder. And I'm not. That's not to say that you don't secure the quote unquote secure the border. You do have to do that up to the point you can. But we've already discussed that the real border is the E-Verify in the workplace. Then there's also the border that you have to have at least some control over. And then you have to have. Well, I think it was one of the candidates running for president last year in the last presidential cycle said we need a stronger wall with more openings. And I think that expanded worker access to this country has to be part of the solution, as well as some kind of punishment for people who came here illegally.
Now, when you don't have American workers working and they can't pay their bills and there's foreclosures. No, if we were in a better time economically, I think people would be a lot more open to ideas, but they can't even pay their bills.
But would you acknowledge, Roseanne, that many of the Americans who are not working now would not be taking the jobs that some of these illegal immigrants are taking or working for those wages?
I think they would be working. You know what? I do. Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, when you're not making your rent, when you're not being able to, you will take any job. Who did these jobs before the illegals were here?
Well,
Americans.
This is where I think where we would disagree. There are people there who would need a job. They have to come to work, they have to do a job, and they have to be responsible for going to that job. They would prefer to stay home or stand on the corners than go and do jobs. And they will find some way. It'll be welfare. They will find some other way to survive, but it will not be working. And basically what you're saying is that if you went into virtually any restaurant in America, and you're basically saying is if you by way waving a magic wand, if you got rid of every person in that restaurant who came from Mexico or Central America, how many of those restaurants would survive? What would the service economy in Las Vegas or any city in the United States be like if every Hispanic decided to stay home tomorrow? And would there be African-Americans and whites who are currently out of work, would they be willing to do those jobs? You're saying yes. I don't believe
that. We have soldiers that gave their lives, gave their blood. That's the job. That kind of job they volunteered for. So if they would volunteer to give their own lives, yes. People are out there. They would do those jobs.
I don't mean to suggest that there aren't some. I don't believe the numbers are great enough because the one thing about those who are working, they come here because they want a better life for themselves or their children. Some come here for bad reasons. Okay,
that's right.
I don't think you know these sweet faced 7 and 8 year olds that we see on television. They're not all like that. Don't tell me there aren't some thugs and gangbangers that are coming. We just don't see
that's
their
correct.
Pictures. Okay, so I think that's the way the media focuses on this particular issue. But in this particular case, you cannot tell me that I believe a large portion. I don't even want to say the majority, a large portion of people that are coming to the United States, whether from Mexico or Central America, are coming because they want to improve their lives.
That's right.
And they're the same ones who just went to the White House and demanded access to the White House. That's what we're seeing with these people. They're being taught by the different advocacy groups. Absolutely.
Well, the ones that just got
the
off
dreamers.
The train,
I am illegal and I'm unafraid. That is what
illegal
we
and
see.
Proud.
Yeah,
we need to have an
and
illegal.
And are like valedictorians in high school, and God forbid, want to go to college. Look, this country is built on people that are willing to hustle and work. And immigrants
and follow the law.
Immigrants are some of the hardest working people you're going to find in our country. And if we don't figure out politically how to embrace these folks, which is traditionally over the last 200 years, how our country's gotten to be so prosperous, among other reasons, we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
How do we communicate to them that one of the reasons why there may be some resentment is that there are generations of people who came to this country from other nations who followed the rules. And I think, as I've said in this program many times, part of it is Americans don't like people that butt in line. They're very generous people. That's why even tonight there are people all over the United States who are reaching out, who are giving money, who are giving services, Catholic charities. They're doing all kinds of services for those, the 50, 40 plus thousand that have come to the United
States. I'll tell you how.
We are a very benevolent country, but again, and this is what I want you to answer. You got 7 minutes before, because we're going to talk our next hour about it. I want to know, what is the price of benevolence? When is benevolence become welfare? And that's my question for my Democrat. 1-800-723-8029. If you're on the line, you will be on the air when we continue. If you're watching this show on television, we're going to see you next week. If you're listening coast to coast on radio, we're going to pause for network news, then back with another full hour and your calls wall to wall in hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, featuring live telephone calls tonight and commentary by Bruno Barron, Dan Johnson, and Rosanna Polito. Our program coming to you by home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 1-800-723-8029. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. And if you'd like to tweet us a comment, it's at Dumo, D-U-M-O. And again, go to our website, beyondthebeltway.com, if you want to hear and see previous broadcasts. We have a lot of people around the table this evening. I've just mentioned their names. We have a lot of people on the phones as well. Let's go to them. Let's go to Kevin, listening to us on WLS Radio in Chicago. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hi.
This war on women that the Democrats keep bringing up, I think the war on women is leaving our borders open, because the estimates are between 15 and 20,000 Americans every year are either killed or maimed by illegal immigrants.
Where do you get that statistic, sir?
Stephen Steinwhite came to one of our Tea Party meetings.
Who's he?
I asked him that question directly. I told him.
Who's he?
Back 2007 or so.
Who is he, though?
I testified before Congress with Dr. Stephen Steinwhite in 2007.
Who is he?
He works with the Center for Immigration Studies, and he's, you know, one of their guys who goes around talking about the different facts and figures on illegal immigration.
And he says that illegal immigrants are responsible for the death of 20,000 Americans?
At least, yeah. There was another guy. Yes, sounds, absolutely.
That sounds like a startling statistic.
It's startling.
That's hard to
believe.
It is startling.
So this is what I find puzzling. There's a sort of disconnect between the facts of, like, the compromise Senate bill, that it will reduce our deficit, it will make us all wealthier, and the deeply held convictions of opponents that that isn't true. And in fact, there's like an epidemic of violence and disease and pestilence that's all can lay down at the feet of the undocumented. So I want to ask you,
yes,
and any callers, those that oppose the compromise Senate bill, which the House could pass and life would be good, do you disagree that it's going to reduce our deficit? Do you disagree that it's going to improve our economy?
Well, you know, you have to know where our focus is. As the director of the Illinois Minuteman Project, I met many of those families who had a loved one die from an illegal alien. Terrible accidents, and you know, their loved ones should be here, because those people shouldn't be in the country. I think my allegiance is to every American, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, who's here, that they get the jobs there, they get our tax dollars, our veterans get whatever they need with our tax dollars, and if we have any left over, then we'll have this conversation.
I'll classify that answer as a dodge.
Well, that's your right to do so if you want to, Dan. But the other side of it, too, is that, you know, you've said three or four times now, and maybe if you repeat something often enough, people often take it as fact when it may not be. I haven't seen the analysis of this compromise Senate bill. I'm skeptical that a government that can't build a working website for $800 million can't get Obamacare right, has to do all the different things to make waivers on Obamacare, can't keep the VA running so that the VA works, can't do anything, $12,000 a year here in Chicago, $15,000 a year, educate children. The idea that they know that this is going to save us money and reduce our deficit, I think it's fair to say that the American people deserve the right to be skeptical that the Senate bill is going to make everything sunny and light.
I second the motion.
And then I'll stop on this one. What's really kind of weird and a little bit borderline disturbing is this sort of attack on facts, an attack on the idea that we can actually have facts. Because what I'm hearing you say is, well, gee, it doesn't matter that you can go to the CBO website. It doesn't matter that economists and statisticians can run the numbers and see this is the effect. Your answer was, don't believe the truth because things are all kind of truthy. So therefore, even though there's a report that anybody can read, don't believe it because sort of in our gut we know better. Well, that's a little bit disturbing.
Since you're attacking what I said, remember, I'm the guy in the middle here who actually thinks that it's worth expanding immigration. And I understand the arguments about opening up immigration. And quite frankly, I'll even go so far as to make the ultra-controversial statement that I like cheap labor because that way things can be done cheaper. So there, I understand the economic arguments, but what I'd like to see whether the Senate report takes into account how many of these children are going to end up in how many public schools where they're going to be forced into an ineffective English as a second language program as opposed to immersion. How many bureaucrats across school districts across this nation are going to be wasted? So I want to see both sides of that because I don't believe – just like I wouldn't believe every John Boehner fact out there in the world because John Boehner says it's true, I'm certainly not going to believe every Harry Reid or Dick Durbin fact when I know how
– It's a nonpartisan congressional budget office. You know better.
We both know that not every U.S. federal report online at some federal website is 100% accurate.
I want to ask Dan the question I asked before the break. What is the price of benevolence? You know, we are a nation that likes to help people in trouble, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a disaster around the world, the American people give out of their own pockets to the Red Cross, Salvation Army, whatever the international cause, they're there. Tsunami, you name it, we're there. In this particular case, Catholic Charities and many other religions, not just Catholic Charities, they are dealing, especially in the state of Texas, they're dealing with these children, including the Red Cross. So my question to you, Dan, though, is when you talk about these costs, and these costs are impacting an American taxpayer family, how do you say to them, when do we say no?
So this is
because let me finish.
Of course.
If 40,000 people have come to the United States in this most recent surge, what if it's 60,000? What if it's 80,000? What if it's 120,000? When is enough enough when the schools are going to be overcrowded, the hospitals are going to be overcrowded, as many are in many areas of the country, primarily in California, Texas, and Arizona, that we just can't do it anymore? How do you say to that person, you know what, we still have to be benevolent, and they're saying, you know what, I'm worrying about the benevolence to my children because I can't send them to college, I don't have a job, or I'm only making X number of dollars. How are you so cavalier?
Like this.
Like that.
Here's how. I'm so puzzled and a little frustrated that the conversation's about benevolence and not about how I'm going to get richer from having more immigrants come to our country, because the facts are, as the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office laid out, if you reject our absurdly broken non-immigration system with the Senate compromise bill where we bring people in and we have more E-Verify and we incorporate and assimilate the 12 or 14 or 10 million people who are here,
40 million.
Right? Not likely to be 40.
Yes, sir.
Then those are new customers. These people make money, pay taxes, reduce our deficit, grow our economy. So the idea that this is like charity is something that I'm having a hard time getting through the keyhole of the fact of that's how a growing economy works. And we're all better off when there's more consumers making stuff.
Because
it's not about benevolence. The facts are We're wealthier when we're a growing economy.
In the meantime, there are many families out there that would be middle class or lower middle class families, and they are furious. I think these are the people that Rosanna's talking about. They're furious because they see their hard work being basically dismissed by a government that wants to bring more people in, many people, again, not following the rules, and that drives them crazy. Back shortly from Chicago.
If I were a billionaire, I'd buy the party.
Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to Scott, listening to us on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Go ahead, Scott. Nice to hear from Texas.
One of you talked about an assault on facts. This isn't an assault on facts. It's an assault on our intelligence as voters. One of you says that every illegal alien is some thug who's going to kick our dogs and rob us. The other one says the only people who work in this country are illegal aliens. One talks about CBO. The CBO only assesses numbers that are given to it. If all the assumptions are right, everything goes right, then, yeah, these numbers work. That doesn't mean they will in real life.
Well, there's a difference between having a crystal ball and saying, I'm going to reject the premise that we can come up with some good estimates as to what the effect on our economy and our budget is going to be if this bill passes. Wouldn't you agree that we want agencies to do something like that, and we ought to accept these things as great, reasonable guesses?
Yeah, we ought to do it. We ought to accept it. But we also ought to know that just because you're guessing something doesn't mean that it's right. You look at this from the perspective that my bill and the way that I want it done is the only way to do it. And everything else that the other party or that my detractors want to put in is a bunch of junk and should be, thrown out of America. You don't know whether or not a particular bill or this policy is going to save us money or cost us money. They've pretty much been wrong about everything else.
Scott, let me follow up with your question with one of my own for Dan. Because the Democrats and some Republicans for the last several years have been talking about comprehensive immigration reform. Luis Gutierrez, a Democrat from Illinois, has been one of the leaders in the movement. Okay. Now, their concept is, now we talked about e-verifying some of these things and closing the border and or adding border guards to secure the border and all these things that the Republicans wanted in this bill. And this is the bill that's passed the Senate. It basically says, as I understand it and recall the bill, is that if you are here illegally, you're supposed to come forward, go to the government, identify yourself, then they will know who you are.
Yep.
Then you have to agree to pay a fine. There's going to be a fine.
Steep.
Steep fine. Then you're going to have to go back to the country of origin, Mexico, and you're going to have to wait there, fill out the necessary papers, and then a few years later, six or seven years later, can come back.
Yeah.
Now, my question to you is, this is whether this bill passes the common sense test. And this bill does not pass the common sense. This is the one that everybody's talking about. What makes you think that people who've snuck into this country, who are illegally here, who are below the radar, who nobody knows who they are, who are fearful, whenever a border agent walks into a restaurant in Texas, what makes you think that all of a sudden they're going to say, you know what, tomorrow, honey, we're going in, we're going to register, and we're going to pay that $10,000, whatever the fine, we're going to pay that fine. And by the way, we got to go back for 6 years, then we're going to wait in line. And you know what? 6 years from now, when the kids are half raised, we're going to come back to the United States. What person in Washington thinks that if somebody came here who initially broke the law when they came here, why do they think they're going to support this law? Why do they think they're going to do any of these things that are called for? And this is the compromise. It's a compromise based on an idiotic lack of common sense.
Well, because the other options are going to be squeezed out for these folks.
Like what? What are we going to do? What are we going to get tough on?
We're going to do what everybody on the right has been saying they want. They want their e-verify. They want to hold the business owners accountable. But on the comprehensive side, he said, for these people, we want to give a path.
If they are fearful of that, and if they're fearful of e-verify, pass e-verify and let them willingly, which I think is one thing that Mitt Romney said, let them willingly, by attrition, go back to where they came from because the jobs will dry up. Why is that not
that
a
worked
much
out really
more
well?
Common sense?
That worked out really well for Mitt Romney electorally.
But is it a more common sense?
Well, actually, the way you described it, I mean, this is where I hopefully Rosanna doesn't hit me because she's sitting next to me here. But the one change I would make to that bill, and I would actually soften it up a little bit. I don't know exactly what the fine was, but it's funny that they've been listening. They must have been listening to the show because three, four, five years ago, talking about this issue on this show, when you've invited me on, I've said exactly this. You have to have a fine. It has to be steep. The one thing I would not do is I would not kick them out of the country, because that's the one thing that will make them not come forward. That's the piece of the bill that's going to break the bill. Instead, you say,
this is the bill everybody wants. Well, this is the bill that's passed. This is the bill they're saying to the House Republicans. You people are racist. You're
that's
wrong
the one,
because you won't
the,
vote on the Senate
the one
bill.
One fly in the ointment that you brought out was the fact that they have to pay a fine and then leave. You make them pay the fine, and that I'd let them finance the fine so that they can stay and work here and not disrupt the working environment. I'm pro-legalized immigration. The worst thing we have in this country right now is we have a set of laws that won't work and an entire nation
them. I am pro-legal immigration as well. I want to get back to the common sense. And again, you're Mr. Politician, okay?
Yeah.
You're a lobbyist. You know how lawmakers think. Why, for the last, since McCain and Teddy Kennedy came up with this idea when George Bush was president, this was the panacea. This is how we solve the problem.
Because as I read it,
why is that? Why is my concern for the lack of common sense in this bill not given some credence by you?
Because I think Democrats that would prefer not to do something like this have had to cave or compromise, whatever term you prefer, with the hardline right-wingers to come up with some path to citizenship that isn't going to set up the alarm bells on, right-wing talk radio, not here, God bless, but some other shows that are right-wing, to say amnesty, and to come up with something which seems tough and might not be common sense but can get some Republican votes that fear a right-wing primary.
So what we do is we're going to have Republicans, Democrats get together to come up with a bill that each of them knows is not going to work. And isn't that what we did in 1986 with Simpson and Mazzoli? Well, and that's where we are today. We thought we were going to solve this problem, and all we did was we put up a big sign that said, "Welcome to the United States," and we went from where we were to where we are right now.
And
there's probably threefold more illegal immigrants in the country now than there were when Simpson and Mazzoli
were there. And the 1986 amnesty did a lot for Republicans, didn't it? And then you have John McCain, who carries waters for illegals for so long, and what did they do for him when he was running for the presidency?
Well, they can't vote.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Joanne,
they can't vote.
In Schaumburg, Illinois, you've been a patient woman, and we thank you very much. Go ahead. You're on the air. Joanne, are you there? Joanne, I guess you haven't. You're not a patient woman. I'm sorry. Perhaps Sharon in Itasca is. Are you patient, Sharon?
I'm a very patient woman. Thank you for taking my call. And here's my comment. I called Luis Gutierrez, and I basically told his office, look, Senor Gutierrez, since you are so intent on passing social justice legislation or any kind of social experimentation, that you lefties, as your guest on the panel, Dan, he's so fond of saying right wing. I've got words for left wings that I wouldn't be on the radio to be able to say. But I'd like them to live under the kind of very social justice legislation and basically progressive kind of laws first, and then let the rest of us decide whether we want our families to or not. I'm referring to the man who was finally apprehended who had a case of fulminating tuberculosis. God knows how many people he contaminated on his northward journey to North America through Mexico, originating in Guatemala. And the problem with how we're too generous here, we have too many benefits, welfare benefits, to keep people out of the workplace. If someone can't find that full-time job because Obamacare is saying, look, you got to work at least 30, 35 hours, and then you people who have businesses are going to wind up paying for your health care. Small businesses are saying, we don't know what they're going to do with the taxing structure next, so we're just going to hire people part-time. What they need to do is take away the benefits of welfare for these people. They'll get off their duffs and find a job. This is what used to happen 50 years ago. I don't know what's going on today, but you give a chance for the left to take over, the left-wingers, I'm addressing Dan, and it becomes disastrous. This is the problem. And I come from a union Democrat voting family, and I don't know what the heck has happened to the party, but to me it's unrecognizable. I consider myself a libertarian independent with a conservative side. I'm pro-life. So all of this stuff is completely an anathema to me, and I don't know why our lawmakers can't get some basic common sense in there and get this done right. Thank you for your time.
Right. Well, go ahead, Dan.
Well, Sharon,
you want her to repeat that?
Yeah, right, right. Could you put that in outline format? I would look. You said something like, "Don't let the lefties take over." As I recall, and it is worth noting that if we had a modern election system where whichever party got the most votes, that party controlled the House.
But we don't.
Then we would be running things in Washington, and so we'd be able to pass the bills that would make our country stronger, more prosperous, and safer. But when the Democrats ran Washington in the glory years of 2009 and 2010, as I recall, when we passed amazing things like the Affordable Care Act, which has extended the life of Medicare, which has extended health insurance to 20 million people.
Like a Democratic campaign commercial. Yeah.
Sharon, I would just say this. We've lived under Democratic rule, and it was great, and we got to go back to it.
All right. I understand, Bob, you are a Border Patrol agent, and you're calling from El Paso. Is that correct? On line four, Bob, are you there? Bob, KTSM, are you there? Bob.
He got a call.
Going once, going twice. Is anybody there? Somebody down in the radio studio. Press a button and put somebody on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Phones are down again.
Mike, are you there?
I am certainly here.
Okay, all right, Mike, made it.
I guess every other line works. Go ahead. I think we're going to put Todd Neville on fixing the lines next week. You know what? Now that you're on the air, I'm going to put you on hold because we have to break for a spot. But stay on the line. We're going to put you on hold. So let's not send Mike because he's going to be really ticked off. He's been waiting a long time. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont, go ahead, make that particular point. We're back on the air. You were making a point. Step up to the microphone.
So today it's a anniversary. 100 years ago this week, the Imperial German government declared war on Germany and Russia, triggering the United Kingdom declaring war on Germany as well, which began what most sides thought was going to be like a 1 or 2 month war, and of course turned out to be a horrific Great War.
It was World War One.
The one of two. At the time, they didn't know that. They called it the Great War. But there's something a little uplifting, right, that for the 19-teens, the 1920s, the 30s, the 40s, the idea that if you said as a respectable member of society, you know, in 2014, Europe, Germany, France, Britain, the idea of them going to war will be preposterous. They'll actually be there'll be peace. Unified peace. They'll actually have a shared government for a lot of things. Russia, right? Mm-hmm. Right? That you would be laughed out of any learned society. But that's the reality. And so from the horror of 100 years ago for a 30 years war, we've come a long way.
That was Dan Johnson, and he is our progressive, our libertarian from the Heartland Institute.
Bruno Barron.
Is Bruno Barron. And Rosanna Polito is with us. She was a Minuteman leader in Illinois, and also
yes.
You've been to the border.
Yes.
You were to the border long before it was fashionable.
Absolutely.
As was I.
A vigilante, according to George Bush.
I know. Let us go to Bobby. He's listening to us on WKRZ in Elkhart, Indiana. Are you there, Bobby?
Yeah, sure. I'm on the phone tonight.
Good. Well, it's okay.
Yeah, I know. I would hate to be behind the front on that deal. Listen, my point is, I got a couple here, and I'm a working class guy. I've never made over $30,000 in my life. Live in the heart of RV country in northern Indiana, and we have a lot of immigrants here, illegal Mexicans, specifically. My daughter married a Venezuelan, and his family left Venezuela to escape the atrocities there. Illegally, they came to this country. But they worked their tails off. They went, and now they are legal American citizens. But it's so hard for an immigrant to become a legal American citizen that if you start talking about they got to pay fines and this and that, first of all, if they got to come up with the money all to begin with, I don't know any of you. You guys probably could, but I sure as the heck couldn't come up with the money and drop it in the bucket and go, oh, here's my fine, and okay, now I'm going to go back and come back. It don't work that way, folks. You guys are living somewhere else. I don't know where it's at. You're not out on the street.
To bring them
you're
over
not
the
out.
Border.
No, Bobby. That's the point I'm trying to make. If because you're right, most Americans, regardless, it's not just those that you know are in your price range or your salary range. I mean, how many people have that kind of money that they could put down and pay a fine? And again, to Roseanne's point. I'm hearing these stories that $7,000 or $8,000 is being paid to coyotes. Well, where do these parents? How do they have so much money if they're poor and they're downtrodden?
Well, because
they've got a savings account with $8,000 in it.
That goes against.
They finance it. Yeah, over 5 or 6 years.
And this is the hilarious part. I mean, the fact is that you can't make somebody pay a fine like that straight up front. You have to finance it, and you allow them to finance it, and you allow them to stay. And that I don't think that is living in fantasy land. That and one of the things that makes it people, you know who they are, you know where they are, you know where they're working, and you can put them on a path to citizenship while they're paying a fine, thereby negating the use of the word
and
amnesty.
They're probably using public benefits. Right now, Illinois pays $4 billion a year in free services for illegal aliens.
There's no chance.
Absolutely.
Our state budget is $59 billion.
$4 billion a year. That was a study done in 2007.
Our state budget is $59 billion. For everything, there's no chance that figure's close to reality.
Ask every other state. Ask California what they're paying.
The issue there, and again, this goes back to something Dan brought up, and it's the same thing that, Bruce, you've said it. No one on this issue, and it's the same with a lot of the other issues, no one on this issue is willing to put together all the numbers, all the costs, all the things, all the time. $59 billion budget, the idea that it's $4 billion a year is pretty difficult. What you've got to be doing is you've got to be throwing in every tertiary cost you can possibly squeeze in there.
Education, incarceration, health care.
And again,
and
all those
benefits.
That should be going to our veterans and Illinois who are homeless.
Look, if you'd like an economy that's contracting and getting smaller and having less income and less opportunity, then have fewer people. But if you want an economy that's growing,
we bring a million
it's not enough.
People a year to be citizens.
If you'd like your Social Security,
a year, that's more than any.
If you'd like your Social Security, you better get people in here paying those Social Security taxes.
I understand that Bob on line 4 is calling from KTSM in El Paso, and he's identified himself as a Border Patrol agent. We're going to try him again. Bob, are you there? Bob, are you there? Line 4 is not there for the second time. But are you there, Bob? Anyone?
No, Bob, Indiana.
Okay.
I can hear Bob from El Paso.
Would you like to tell us
how do you like? Yeah, describe what it's like to be a Border Patrol agent. By the way, let me just instead of this from now on, what I'm going to just do is I'm just going to say, who are you and where are you from? Who are you and where are you from?
Well, I'm Bob from Indiana still, if you're hearing me. I don't know if you're hearing me or not.
Go ahead and tell us your story, Bob.
Well, it's just I just told you. But the fact of the matter is that I don't think you guys are living in reality. Your panel's not out there on the streets. You like to talk to each other and you like to argue with each other, but you're not really talking. And you got lobbyists like Dan there, and who's he talking to? Is he talking to the average Joe on the streets?
So Bob, what's your solution?
Tell us what we're missing here.
Well, I don't know that there is a solution, really, because it's such a horrible problem, and I think it really lies with the employers that will hire immigrants And like I say, look, I don't know if you guys have ever been out in an onion field in the muck and picked onions in 90-degree weather in upstate New York.
No.
But it's not a job that most white Americans would want to do, okay? So the illegal immigrants will do it because they have to try to feed their families. So as long as you have lazy Americans...
And by the way, Bob, let me just mention, I made that point about 25 minutes ago. You must not have been listening. I made that particular point. The idea that illegal immigrants are taking jobs that Americans won't do is true, because a lot of Americans won't do certain types of jobs anymore. It's either beneath them, or they've found another way, or they've got another scam going to put money in their pockets. But you know what? Most illegal immigrants who come to this country are hard working, dependable people who work their butts off.
Great. Come here legally. But yeah, I forgot my point.
I think one of the things that Bob is saying that's interesting is he's actually brought three or four different points to the for some of which argue for the Republican side of the immigration debate, some of which argue the Democratic side of the immigration debate. And I think that one of the reasons you can see why it's been so difficult to solve this problem is because the American people themselves are of split minds on this. I think most Americans are pro-legal immigration, and they're pro bringing people to this country to work hard. But it's also... And it's been brought up many, many times. It's very easy to sit there and say we can all pay for this and everything's going to be great. But we have a groaning, failing welfare state at this moment. The things that the government is supposed to be able to do well, it can't do well for all the money and all the brains in the world. And then we're supposed to bring more people here to do
things. But again, if comprehensive immigration reform passes, the Senate version, I mean, certainly we know the effectiveness of the government to identify who the illegal immigrants are. They're going to come up. How is this going to be administered realistically?
The same people who administer the VA program.
So basically, the best minds in business, the people that run systems like this, the best minds in government came up with a compromise bill. And the answer that I'm hearing you guys say is forget it. We like the status quo. We're going to keep things the way they are.
Go ahead, Bruno.
You think that's an unfair criticism? Based on what Bruce was saying and what you're saying, I'm partially on board with the Senate compromise bill. But here's the thing, and this is you're ignoring it, Dan. The VA can't provide benefits to the veterans. The IRS is a corrupt, it's a RICO organization working for one political party against another political party.
That's a myth.
All kinds of things going on in this federal government. $845 billion, they can't do a good website. State of Oregon can't do a website.
Bruno,
Virginia can't do a
yes
website.
Or no. And you've said kind of maybe.
It's fair to say
no, you're
the
no.
people.
We're giving up.
Yeah, you're a no. You're a no. Like
it's
the,
fair
like
for people
you're
to
no.
question the government's ability to make this bill work even if it does
so
work.
Then that means you're a no, and that means folks that are a no have to wear the jacket for keeping a broken system in place when you had a better option at the table and you turned it down.
You have not made the case it's a better option.
Rosanna. I would like to go to a point that Bobby from Elkhart made about agriculture and onions. Agriculture has been the revolving door that has created a lot of illegal immigration. You know, Jose is picking those onions until he calls his cousin who's in Chicago and says, I'm getting $15 to hang drywall. And he's gone. He's in Chicago doing drywall, and now they have nobody for those onions. And so it's been the big revolving door here in America.
Bill Beatty sends this tweet. Democrats don't want or will not enforce the immigration laws on the books now. Why would I believe they would enforce a new one?
Thank you.
Good question,
Absolutely.
Bill.
Absolutely.
1-800-723-8029 is the phone number. @Dumo is the tweet. Bruce Dumont at museum.tv is the email address. More callers when we come back, hopefully.
Thanks for my...
Those are taking jobs Americans don't want. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We've all agreed during the break that if we put some employers who hire illegals in jail. Maybe that would get the send a signal. That's one of the things that needs to be done. Is we've got two things. You've got people that are coming here because they want to make money. That's a worthy goal for themselves and their family. But if you have someone who willingly hires an illegal immigrant, they too are violating the law, and they should pay a price. Not just a slap on the wrist. They should go to. They should do some hard time. Gary in Morristown, Tennessee, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Great.
All right. Are you there?
We're here.
I would just like to say, sir, that you know what? I'll clean anybody's toilet. I'll cut your yard. I'll do what I can to work around here. And, you know, that's not a problem for me. But I would like to address the liberal Dan there. Besides his maiden gardener that he probably hires, how many of these kids is he going to take in? I'm sure he has a big house. And why don't he give all the money he makes from this show today, you know, to the government? Or why don't he write them a check then if he's
Gary,
that proud
great, hold on,
of that party?
Gary, I'm putting on my checkbook right now. And for all the money that I'm making
off
this.
No one is paid to do this program.
Yeah, it's a volunteer activity.
How many kids you got? How many of these kids you got taken? How many square foot is your house?
I got two kids, Gary, but you know what I am willing to do?
Oh, I'm sure you got
I'm willing, Gary, to pay.
You got an attic. You can take some kids in. How many Guatemalans or Hondurans? You're willing to force these kids on everybody else. I just want to know, Dan, how many are you going to take
in? What
do
you think, Gary? I'm not an American? You don't think I pay taxes, Gary? I don't understand why you're saying I'm going to foist it on somebody else.
And I'm willing to work for these jobs that nobody wants. But, Dan, come on. You got a big house. You got an attic and a basement. Why don't you take in these kids?
Gary, are you Google? Are you Google mapping me, Gary? Are you stalking me, Gary? I'm feeling you're spooking me out a little bit here, Gary.
And nothing will ever change because liberal is a mental disease. Oh. Liberalism.
Wonderful. Well, you know that's the type.
You have the phone calls back.
Yeah, God bless the phone lines.
Gary, hang on 1 second. Stay right on the line. I want to extend your point beyond just Dan, who is here today, and that is the do-gooders of society. Many of them are involved with church groups, and many of them are involved in charities. And there are many NGOs and charities that their goal is to help people in trouble. We talked about this earlier in the broadcast. We have an example in many states where Catholic Charities is taking in, and they're dealing with these kids. In some cases, there may be some federal support that is going to go to them to care for these kids. So that is the humanitarian aspect of what we do. But I asked the question to Dan at the beginning is, at what point do we say enough is enough? Does a liberal ever have the capacity to say we just can't do any more, Dan?
Yeah, I think it's...
What is that number?
It's a fact-driven analysis. And so the tricky part about the immigration debate is the fundamental fact that your average American is better off with immigration than without eludes most opponents of the bill. So, yes, if in fact immigration was a net loser to the country, well, I wouldn't be for it. But it's not. It's a net gain. There are winners and losers.
At a particular point, will that formula change in your view?
Of course it will.
What do we know that? Do we have any idea what that number is?
I would imagine that if it's something like 50 million low-skilled undocumented workers, at some point the balance starts to tilt.
And
but since
if they come, if they continue, because let's say we get to that magic point, when do we say that we're not going to take your tired, you're not going to take your poor anymore, we don't want anymore? What is the signal that the United States is going to say so that everyone around the world who wants to come into this country, primarily sneak into the country from the south border, they're going to get the message? They're going to say, you know what? Boy, you know what? I've decided I'm going to stay in El Salvador, and I'm going to fight these gangs, and I'm going to live in poverty, And by the way, I, you know, my brother used to go to the United States, but I'm not going to the United States anymore because the United States has reached a certain quota and they don't want me anymore.
You don't think that message is getting sent right now from what the House just did?
No.
Look at what the House just did.
I don't think that message is getting sent from the House. And to answer Bruce's question, the fact is that the minute they do that, that's when the riots start.
Alex in Pennsylvania, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, hi guys. How are you?
Okay.
All right, so I just want to tell you, I'm an immigrant, and I've been in the country for 8 years, and my case is still pending, all right? And meanwhile, I went to school, I graduated school, I open a business right now, and I hired people, right? I hired immigrants, and I hired U.S. citizens. I use E-Verify right now for everything. But the final part is, because my case is still pending, and then I don't know what's going to happen with me. Because right now, the state is kind of weird. Because I was here during the Bush era, then I was here right now during Obama. He promised so many things for immigrants. And right now, we still didn't get anything. Because right now...
But you are hiring illegal immigrants now?
No, I don't. I just verify. I mean, all my people
verify,
right
okay.
now, they're all legal here. And then, but I am kind of still paying. I'm in the air. I don't know what's going to do with me, but... I'm just going right now, for instance, to different states, to open different accounts, and I'm hiring people here and there, and I'm trying to grow my business.
Well,
Dan, quick 10 seconds, Alex, because then we got to go.
That's why it's a big unresolved question, and hopefully we'll get some resolution soon.
Don't hold your breath. That was Dan Johnson, Bruno Barron, Rosanna Polita. They've all been here. This program is a Jenny B production, produced in association with WS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Steve Jakowski and Todd Neville for their assistance in the production of this program. Good to have the calls back this evening, even though we had some problems. We got lots of people from coast to coast and border to border standing by as we go off the air. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.